not totally awake, so this probably isn't a good idea, but I'm gonna try it anyway. I am going to read to you from The Tao of Pooh by Benjamin Hoff. There's a foreword. "What's this you're writing?" asked Pooh, climbing onto the writing table. "The Tao of Pooh," I replied. "The How of Pooh?" asked Pooh, smudging one of the words I had just written. "The Tao of Pooh," I replied, poking his paw away with my pencil. "It seems more like the Owl of Pooh," said Pooh, rubbing his paw. "Well, it's not," I replied huffily. "What's it about?" asked Pooh, leaning forward and smearing another word. "It's about how to stay happy and calm under all circumstances," I yelled. "Have you read it?" asked Pooh. That was after some of us were discussing the great masters of wisdom, and someone was saying how all of them came from the East, and I was saying that some of them didn't, but he was going on and on, just like this sentence, not paying any attention, when I decided to read a quotation of wisdom from the West to prove that there is more to the world than one half, and I read, "When you wake up in the morning, Pooh," said Piglet at last, "what's the first thing you say to yourself?" "What's for breakfast?" said Pooh. "What do you say, Piglet?" "I say, I wonder what's going to happen exciting today," said Piglet. Pooh nodded thoughtfully. "It's the same thing," he said. "What's that?" the unbeliever asked. "Wisdom from a Western Taoist," I said. "It sounds like something from Winnie the Pooh," he said. "It is," I said. "That's not about Taoism," he said. "Oh, yes, it is," I said. "No, it's not," he said. "What do you think it's about?" I said. "It's about this dumpy little bear that wanders around asking silly questions, making up songs, and going through all kinds of adventures without ever accumulating any amount of intellectual knowledge or losing his simple-minded sort of happiness. That's what it's about," he said. "Same thing," I said. That was when I began to get an idea to write a book that explained the principles of Taoism through Winnie the Pooh, and explained Winnie the Pooh through the principles of Taoism. When informed of my intentions, the scholars exclaimed, "Preposterous," and things like that. Others said it was the stupidest thing they'd ever heard and that I must be dreaming. Some said it was a nice idea, but too difficult. "Just where would you even begin?" they asked. Well, an old Taoist saying puts it this way: "A 1,000-mile journey starts with one step." So I think that we will start at the beginning. The Tao of Pooh. The How of Pooh? "You see, Pooh," I said, "a lot of people don't seem to know what Taoism is." "Yes," said Pooh, blinking his eyes. "So that's what this chapter is for, to explain things a bit." "Oh, I see," said Pooh. "And the easiest way to do that would be for us to go to China for a moment." "What?" said Pooh, his eyes wide open in amazement. "Right now?" "Of course. All we need to do is lean back, relax, and there we are." "Oh, I see," said Pooh. Let's imagine that we have walked down a narrow street in a large Chinese city and have found a small shop that sells scrolls painted in the classic manner. We go inside and ask to be shown something allegorical, something humorous, perhaps, but with some sort of timeless meaning. The shopkeeper smiles. "I have just the thing," he tells us, "a copy of The Vinegar Tasters." He leads us to a large table and unrolls the scroll, placing it down for us to examine. "Excuse me, I must attend to something for a moment," he says, and goes into the back of the shop leaving us alone with the painting. Although we can see that this is a fairly recent version, we know that the original was painted long ago, just when is uncertain. But by now, the theme of the painting is well known. We see three men standing around a vat of vinegar. Each has dipped his finger into the vinegar and has tasted it. The expression on each man's face shows his individual reaction. Since the painting is allegorical, we are to understand that these are no ordinary vinegar tasters, but are instead representatives of the three teachings of China, and that the vinegar they are sampling represents the essence of life. The three masters are Kung Fu Tzu, Confucius, Buddha, and Lao Tzu, author of the oldest existing book of Taoism. The first has a sour look on his face, the second wears a bitter expression, but the third man is smiling. To Kung Fu Tzu, life seemed rather sour. He believed that the present was out of step with the past, and that the government of man on earth was out of harmony with the way of heaven, the government of the universe. Therefore, he emphasized reverence for the ancestors, as well as for the ancient rituals and ceremonies in which the emperor, as the son of heaven, acted as intermediary between limitless heaven and limited earth. Under Confucianism, the use of precisely measured court music, prescribed steps, actions, and phrases all added up to an extremely complex system of rituals, each used for a particular purpose at a particular time. A saying was recorded about Kung Fu Tzu: if the mat was not straight, the master would not sit. This ought to give an indication of the extent to which things were carried out under Confucianism. To Buddha, the second figure in the painting, life on earth was bitter, filled with the attachments and desires that led to suffering. The world was seen as a setter of traps, a generator of illusions, a revolving wheel of pain for all creatures. In order to find peace, the Buddhists considered it necessary to transcend the world of dust and reach nirvana, literally a state of no wind. Although the essentially optimistic attitude of the Chinese altered Buddhism considerably after it was brought in from its native India, the devout Buddhist often saw the way to nirvana interrupted all the same by the bitter wind of everyday existence. To Lao Tzu, the harmony that naturally existed between heaven and earth from the very beginning could be found by anyone at any time, but not by following the rules of the Confucianists. As he stated in his Tao Te Ching, the Tao Virtue book, earth was in essence a reflection of heaven, run by the same laws, not by the laws of men. These laws affected not only the spinning of distant planets, but the activities of the birds in the forest and the fish in the sea. According to Lao Tzu, the more man interfered with the natural balance produced and governed by the universal laws, the further away the harmony retreated into the distance, the more forcing, the more trouble. Whether heavy or light, wet or dry, fast or slow, everything had its own nature already within it, which could not be violated without causing difficulties. When abstract and arbitrary rules were imposed from the outside, struggle was inevitable. Only then did life become sour. To Lao Tzu, the world was not a setter of traps, but a teacher of valuable lessons. Its lessons needed to be learned, just as its laws needed to be followed. Then all would go well. Rather than turn away from the world of dust, Lao Tzu advised others to join the dust of the world. What he saw operating behind everything in heaven and earth, he called Tao, the way. A basic principle of Lao Tzu's teaching was that this way of the universe could not be adequately described in words, and that it would be insulting both to its unlimited power and to the intelligent human mind to attempt to do so. Still, its nature could be understood, and those who cared the most about it and the life from which it was inseparable understood it best. Over the centuries, Lao Tzu's classic teachings were developed and divided into philosophical, monastic, and folk religious forms. All of these could be included under the general heading of Taoism. But the basic Taoism that we are concerned with here is simply a particular way of appreciating, learning from, and working with whatever happens in everyday life. From the Taoist point of view, the natural result of this harmonious way of living is happiness. You might say that happy serenity is the most noticeable characteristic of the Taoist personality, and a subtle sense of humor is apparent even in the most profound Taoist writings, such as the 2,500-year-old Tao Te Ching. In the writings of Taoism's second major writer, Zhuang Zi, quiet laughter seems to bubble up like water from a fountain. "But what does that have to do with vinegar?" asked Pu. "I thought I had explained that," I said. "I don't think so," said Pu. "Well, then, I'll explain it now." "That's good," said Pu. In the painting, why is Lao Tzu smiling? After all, that vinegar that represents life must certainly have an unpleasant taste, as the expressions on the faces of the other two men indicate. But through working in harmony with life's circumstances, Taoist understanding changes what others may perceive as negative into something positive. From the Taoist point of view, sourness and bitterness come from the interfering and unappreciative mind. Life itself, when understood and utilized for what it is, is sweet. That is the message of the vinegar tasters. "Sweet? You mean like honey?" asked Pooh. "Well, maybe not that sweet," I said. "That would be overdoing it a bit." "Are we still supposed to be in China?" Pooh asked cautiously. "No, we're through explaining, and now we're..." "Now we're through explaining, and now we're back at the writing table." "Oh. Well, we're just in time for something to eat," he added, wandering over to the kitchen cupboard. I think I will stop there for now.